Friday, April 23rd, 2022. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means running around Arlington, Virginia, finding a way to get to convince my app that I am in the state of Virginia so that way I can get my bet down. That happened recently in the past week. I was at work. I was in the office in Arlington, Virginia. And for some reason, I could not convince the DraftKings app that I was, in fact, in the state of Virginia, whether I was on my local Wi-Fi network, when I went outside, connected to the cell phone network, whatever it may be, just could not get it. So finally, I had to go underground. That's right. I went down into a metro station. I had fully intended on like going a few metro stops down, thinking I had to like just completely get out of the area. For some reason, when I went underground and into the metro area, maybe it was something about how the signal repeaters and the station works or whatever it may be, finally was able to convince DraftKings that I was in the state of Virginia and got the bet down that I was looking for. But boy, that was quite the endeavor, convincing the app that I was in fact in the state of Virginia. But hey, you do what you got to do to get down. I'm fortunate enough to be in a state that is legalized. That is nice. I know there's still plenty of people that are crossing state borders just to get their action down. Glad I don't have to deal with that. Today's podcast features my buddy Nate from the Soccer Picks Club, soccer_winners on Twitter. Him and I talk about soccer. Yes, I know some of you are rolling your eyes thinking, oh goodness, here goes Tim with his tiddlywinks. But this, I think the principles and the a lot of the approaches of both betting soccer and who Nate is as a gambler, his introduction to gambling, his journey through, his enjoyment to casino games, etc., I think all of you will find just as interesting. So without further ado, Nate from Soccer Picks Club, enjoy. Nate from the Soccer Picks Club, soccer_winners on Twitter. So you and I have been going back and forth for a little over a year now, I think. We've fallen in love with the USL together, and now we finally got you here on The Better Life. Sir, welcome.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks for having me. And yeah, I think you got me in love with the USL, if I can be candid. Yeah. But now it is a guilty pleasure of mine as well. There's no doubt.
I've never been prouder of a moment in my soccer fandom than learning that I helped someone fall in love with the USL. But before we get there, Nate, we got to start this podcast where we start all the podcasts. All these interviews begins with the same question. What was your first exposure to gambling? What's your earliest recollection of being around gambling?
Yeah. So, you know, funny story. I mean, there's a few things. Number one, I can remember being over at even at grandma and grandpa's, had a pool table in the basement, and there was always a little, you know, friendly game going on among my dad, my grandpa, or different people like that. So, I mean, just even those little things, right? When you really think about how you got exposed to gambling, it's probably a lot of little micro events. But the biggest one, honestly, I think is kind of funny looking back on it now. I can't remember the exact year. This would be like late 80s, early 90s, because I was like probably 9, 10, 11 years old. Our local little newspaper used to run an NFL picks contest every week. And it wasn't like against the spread. It was just like pick who's going to win the game, right? And you picked all the games. And I think the local grocery store or somebody sponsored it, right? So the top person each week got like a $50 or, you know, whatever it was. It might only have been like $20 back then, because that was a long time ago. But my grandma used to have me do it for her because she knew I was such a big fan and I watched all the games and I won it a couple times. And,
grandma's not dumb.
Yeah. You can't say for certain, you know, is that what got me hooked? But like I said earlier, I think it's a lot of those little micro events that add up. And then all of a sudden, you know, before you know it, you know, you're really in. And I've really been in and around sports gambling for quite some time now. So that was probably one of the earliest moments where I like kind of knew what it was.
So then, you know, you're making picks for grandma, bets on a pool game, whatever it may be. When do you start realizing that you have like an interest in this? Like when did you realize like, oh man, like this gambling thing is actually a genuine interest of mine?
Yeah. You know, so, you know, back when that first story, obviously I didn't have, or well, none of us really had internet, right? It wasn't really a thing in the public at that point. And so, you know, there was maybe some local fantasy football when I got into high school and things like that. So got into those things. But really the first time I got serious was a really good friend of mine and I, probably this would be 96, 97 now, I would say. And I just remember sitting in his basement one day and we were playing video games on the computer or whatever. And we went online and we literally stumbled across sportsbook.com. I'll never forget it. Right. And we were hooked. And, you know, like every dumb young sports gambler, we were betting way above our means, had no idea what we were doing. But it was just such a rush that I was hooked. I mean, I still remember, I have like an old duffel bag from sportsbook.com and I've got, and these things are like I said, 20, 22 years old, you know, and that was my first exposure and really got into it. And then just, you know, I've had moments throughout my, you know, college years and different times where maybe I wasn't super active, but it's always been at least a small part of my life really since I was 17, 18 years old.
I love that. Still the duffel, the duffel bag.
Yeah. It doesn't make it out very often, but it's somewhere.
Right. you're going to go out into public. Well, like go to the gym one time with it and someone's going to yell across the gym, degenerate.
Yeah, exactly. There still is a stigma, Tim. It's still out there.
It's true. It's true. Especially like I used to, you know, I don't know how familiar you are with pregame.com as a pick selling sure. website. And, you know, early on in my sports betting, I, you know, followed people on pregame and such. And, you know, they gave me a hoodie the one time I like visited their little headquarters and I used to wear. And then as soon as I sort of realized what I couldn't get rid of that hoodie right. so fast, like any faster. I was like, I do not want anybody seeing me wear this.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, what is your, so you talked about high school, like, you know, do you, you know, when you turn 21, do you enter a casino? Do you have any affinity for Vegas? Like how does your gambling start to evolve as you become an adult?
Yeah. So I actually grew up kind of on the border of Minnesota and Wisconsin. And in Minnesota, the Native American, you know, tribal casinos on the reservation are actually 18 and up.
Oh, that's
so,
right.
I started, you know, entering casinos when I was 18. I don't know if it was my 18th birthday, but it was probably not long after that because it was very, I'm from a very rural area and there was not a lot of nightlife. Right. So, that was a very common thing that, you know, your 18 to, you know, 21 year olds would on a Friday night, Saturday night to our drive up to the casino and, you know, play blackjack, probably throw some money in a slot machine, drink as much free soda as we could, you know, and, right. Usually leave empty with empty pockets and full bellies, of free soda.
those self-serve soda, spots, man, when I have a casino trip, when I know I'm not drinking, oh man, those are so useful. I remember when I went to a casino when I was in Washington State, in my hometown state, shortly after I joined the military. I remember seeing one of those, like, oh man, it's so convenient. I don't have to like wait for someone to just go get it. It's so stupid, right? Like that somehow free soda is just is comforting in a way.
Yeah, so, I remember one night one of my friends walking out with like four of them, you know, like because he had lost so much money, and he put them in, and he goes, "Have a night, Cino. Have a night." Like he was getting one over on him, yeah. Stealing the free soda on the way out the door.
It's like, I'm leaving here with something.
Exactly.
So you go to the, you have stories of the casino. So I can only assume that you enjoy casino gaming.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, kind of started out, like I said, mostly blackjack. That was like so many of us, I think the thing that drew us in.
Yes.
Probably stuck with that for the most part. You know, my earliest trips, even my earliest Vegas trips, blackjack was probably what I was doing most, right? What I was most comfortable with, what I knew, you know, play pretty basic strategy, a very simple progressive betting structure that's worked for me over the years. I've definitely tweaked that over time, but yeah, so that's kind of what, you know, it was early on. Then I got into poker in college. You know, again, I'm from the early 2000s. I was in college when the poker boom was online. Yeah. Poker boom was really taking off. So that, I mean, when I was in college, everybody played poker, and or everybody I hung out with. I mean, I had friends, I remember playing, you know, 20 ring games at a time. And, you know, I was into it, not as much as some. I tended to play a lot more live games or cash games or, you know, tournaments with friends. But I did a decent amount of online poker as well. So then, you know, when I'd go out to Vegas, I'd play in poker rooms as well. But that to me, I always had fun with it, but it just was so time consuming. I mean, you know, I mean, when you go to sit down, you know, a hold'em session for me might have been 6 or 8 hours. So it's not a really social game, right? Because your friends might be off doing something else and you've pretty much killed the whole day or the whole night in the card room. And so, you know, that kind of came and went. And then more recently, craps has become my casino obsession. So I'm now craps and video poker. Specifically, I like to play Ultimate X.
Okay.
So those are the two things I'm going to spend most of my time doing now when I'm in a casino.
Okay. And do you still go to the tribal casinos locally, or they're in your state, or do you find yourself venturing off to maybe Iowa or somewhere else to get maybe some more options for games or sports betting, which I know is not legal in your state currently?
Yeah. So a little bit of both, right? So I do have a couple of very nice casinos within an hour of me that you know, again, don't have sports betting but have craps. We have craps live here. We have, you know, a pretty good selection of table games and slots. So I'm not a frequent visitor as much as I used to be. You know, part of that is family, to be completely candid, and just finding the time. Right. But I do actually, you brought up Iowa. I'll make a trip down there couple times a year. I'm about an hour and a half from the closest Iowa sports book. So it's not a terrible drive, right? So I could go down for a day and just say, okay, I want to watch NFL games this Sunday and I just want to change it up and watch them in the sports book. I can totally do that. And, you know, got a FanDuel sports book right there. Very nice, comfortable environment. And then Illinois actually too, I'm not far from either. The trick there though is the taxes very prohibitive, so the prices are not good in Illinois.
Right.
So I don't like to really wager sports there because it's already such a small edge we have, those of us that even have an edge at all, and then you throw it away by paying an extra 5 cents juice on everything.
Yep.
So it's a mix, but with, you know, Wisconsin's talking about it. I mean, we do have now our tribal casinos have gotten some licenses, so three of them have active licenses now. So there's no active legislature, but I think it's, you know, the elephant's under the tent now. It'd be hard for, once it does come forward, it'd be hard for them to say no to the bigger operators in the mobile because they said yes to the tribes. So hopefully we're going to be on the home stretch here soon.
Yeah. If you're in either Diamond Joe in Dubuque or.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
That's definitely my go-to if I'm going to go live. Bet some games here locally. I'll go down to Diamond Joe. It's a nice facility. Got a couple restaurants. Again, nice sports book. Not huge sports book, but very clean, very nice. And the people are awesome. So
have you attempted to make a over-the-counter or even at the kiosk bet on the USL in Iowa yet?
I have not. No. that's a good one. I'll have to try that. I'm guessing I will have to go to the counter.
Yeah.
I will have to beg for a line and then, you know, they'll look at me funny, but
so who books there?
FanDuel is at the Diamond Joe.
Oh yeah. FanDuel's probably not going to give you a line. I can't get a line using the app here in Virginia. I don't think you're going to get it over the counter in Iowa.
Yeah,
that's too bad because, maybe we could transition to betting soccer here with this. I will be going to Vegas hopefully in June, and I have a bankroll and an aspiration high enough now where I'm going to test the limits taken on USL in Vegas. I'm going to guess that a dime is going to be the limit, and there's a chance it might only be a nickel, but
yeah.
I do remember, and applause to Isle Bettendorf in Bettendorf, Iowa. They have a Caesars book there. I found USL on the kiosk, I think, and then went to the counter to see if I could bet it there. And they were like, hey, can I, I'm looking for the USL. This is the line I'm looking. And I think I bet a couple hundred dollars, and there was no problem.
Yeah. And, you know, I hope it grows. You know, Vegas is a little behind because, you know, soccer hasn't been as mainstream in the U.S., but I'm really hoping like the World Cup and other things, you know, bring more popularity and continue to push that. Because, yeah, when I go to Vegas, it's actually it's not an easy sport to bet. You know, and even the books that have the bigger leagues, you're going to get very basic markets. You might not even get a spread market. You might only get the three-way money line and a total, and that might be it. So,
dude,
that's a little unfortunate.
You're absolutely right. I mean, look, nothing against Circa Sports. They do things the way they do because they're good at it and they know what they can do. Over the winter when I went out there, I asked Jeffrey Benson over Twitter. I was like, hey, can I get a line on, and I think it was maybe EFL Championship or something like that. It was something not really outrageous.
To
soccer bettors anyways, right? It wasn't outrageous. And he was like, sorry, man. He's like, we barely take any action on Bundesliga. We don't have the resources to do leagues like that. And I respect that. Where I had to really roll my eyes, like, are you serious, is when I was in Biloxi. I went to the BetMGM counter at Beau Rivage and I tried betting an English Premier League first half line. And she looked me dead in the eyes and said, we don't do first halves. And I felt my jaw almost dropped. I was like, this is the biggest league in this sport. And it's like, it's not, you know, sides and totals full game, of course, but first half lines are like the next step on the most basic bets to book. I couldn't believe that they didn't book first half lines. And you know what I did? I went and bet elsewhere, which elsewhere being somewhere that American gaming would say you shouldn't be betting. So, they can talk all they want about how they want regulated sports book to prevail, but there are key things like that where it's like, this is such a simple bet to make. Why aren't you booking this? Anyways.
Absolutely.
I digress. As you can see, I'm a little, I have feelings about that, Nate. Okay. So you and I are really into soccer. I'm sure about a handful of people, Tim Kennedy and other people that I know are listening are rolling their eyes, realizing this is a soccer betting episode, but there's nothing I like more than betting on soccer. And I think soccer is really unique. NHL is maybe on the other side of this bubble where it's a big sport, but not as many people are into it despite the value that can be had. When did you start betting on soccer, and were you a fan of the sport before you started betting it, or did you see an edge and started becoming a fan as you pursued it betting wise?
Yeah, I definitely have become a fan since I started betting and modeling games, to be honest. Now, I should back up. I was a casual fan, like so many, right? Like a World Cup fan, right? Like I've talked about before, but the 2010 World Cup is really what drew me to the sport originally. I shared some really great memories with my dad watching that. My son was born during that World Cup. So, you know, got a lot of great memories of that. But, as you know, that's every 4 years. I mean, and I'm not even talking like follow the qualifying process to get to the World Cup. It was like, okay, that's out of sight, out of mind till 2014 now, right? Like,
right.
Or till the Women's World Cup, you know, every couple of years. So that was really the start of it. So it was very basic. It wasn't a betting thing. It wasn't following any of the top leagues in Europe or the fledgling MLS here in the US. What happened is, you know, I got into it and I've always been a bit of a math nerd. I guess you could say like took business stats just because I wanted to in college and sat through those classes thinking the whole time, like, how can I practically apply this to my betting? Right. Like, and so, you know, probability modeling and all kinds of things that have served me very well as I've gotten more serious and I guess what you would call a recreational plus better. You know, and so that's when I kind of started to notice that the lower scoring sports like soccer, maybe hockey to your point a little bit, although that's obviously still quite a bit higher scoring than soccer. Really do lend themselves well to mathematical modeling because they're high variance games. you really need to, you know, find things to try and predict outcomes, or, you know, look at similar games that have happened in the past, or quality of opponent, things that you can really start to see to determine what might happen in that next game. And so that's what really got me into it. I mean, I'll be honest, I modeled a lot of sports for a long time, and some of them I did really poorly at, if I'm being candid. And soccer, it started to go well. So that was really just in like 2017 when I really got into it. I ran those plays for just myself and some buddies for a couple of years till I had a pretty decent sample size before I decided, okay, this is something I think I want to, you know, continue beyond just for myself.
What type of, were you just looking for consistency? Were you looking for, like, what were you looking, what signal were you looking for to realize, okay, I've got something here?
Yeah, I think a combination of things. And I think this is great for anybody trying to get into sports betting, no matter what the sport is. If you're trying to originate and do your own handicapping and picks, right? The number one thing you should be looking for at all times is, are you beating the number? That's the number one thing, right? Like, I don't care. I know people make jokes about this on Twitter and other places. Oh, closing line value doesn't pay the bills. Yes, it does, actually. Over a super large sample size, it absolutely is the only thing that will pay the bills, because the books have an edge going in. So if you're not beating the market, then you're just paying the VIG over time, right? And so I think it's the number one fallacy some sports bettors get into, is they're trying to say, well, tell me who's going to win tonight. I can't do that, right? And people who say they can are full of it. What you're trying to do is figure out, is there a value here, or is this outcome underpriced in the market? And then I want to pounce on that, because over time, if I do that enough, I'm going to make money. And so really, fundamentally, when you ask the question, the number one thing you look for is, did I get a number better than the number ultimately became when the event started? And then the other thing is, obviously, you know, you do want wins, right? You do want profits. So you start to look and say, okay, over a significant sample size, am I returning profit to myself here? And again, of all the sports I've modeled over my 20 plus years of doing some level of modeling, soccer has been my best by far. And so that's why I really just decided to specialize.
Yeah. You mentioned soccer being, you know, the variance can be high, and we're looking at lines saying, you know, is this priced correctly? And to your point, people, you know, who do you think is going to win tonight? Last night, as we're recording this on Thursday, last night was the second round of games in the U.S. Open Cup. Nate, I was on Northern Colorado Hailstorm, 18-1 underdog. They were plus 1,800 when I got them against Real Salt Lake. Had anybody asked me who's going to win tonight, I would have told them Real Salt Lake.
Right.
Is going to win that game. And they're like, okay, is that where you're betting? No, I'm actually on the Northern Colorado Hailstorm at 18-1. 18-1. You can't bet an NBA future right now that cheap, right?
Like, right.
Like, and this is one game. And guess what happened, everybody? The variance happened, and it ended up 1-0, and the Colorado Hailstorm won. And I got paid 18-1 on this one bet. And I didn't tweet it because for this, I'm like, it should be closer to like 13 or 14-1, right? Like, it's not that I thought that, like, oh my goodness, like here's a winner. But I was like, there's a good $4 or $5 like misprice on this, right? This is way too high for a 90-minute game, especially when we're in a tournament where the League One side definitely cares a lot more than the MLS side. Yep. And so everything, you know, not to belabor the point, but I mean, that's what I love about this game is, you know, you don't need one team to outscore the other team by much. You just need one more scoring event than the other. And a lot of times it's a 1-0, sometimes 2-1. Victory. And Nate, as you know, I've made my bread and butter on these high variance, big underdogs, but they're there because they end up getting mispriced based off reputation or whatever else.
Yeah. Or people don't have the patience to throw in 10 losers to get the one winner that you did, right? Because, and you do. And that's great. That's a great way to do it.
What made you decide on the leagues that you were going to choose? This is something I think is really, this is probably the most unique thing about handicapping soccer, because if you're a football handicapper, okay, yeah, you could probably take a lot of the principles you have and take what you know from college football or the NFL and apply a little bit to the other side, right? Seven's a key number, stuff like that. Baseball, I mean, if you're a good baseball handicapper, unless you're Jason Weingarten, you're not really going to apply that to other leagues. Most people, or at least most bettors, don't think so. But when you're a soccer handicapper, once you kind of figured out soccer in general, you can find ways to apply it to dozens of leagues if you are so inclined. I know you bet plenty of leagues both in Europe and in the Americas. What made you decide on the leagues that you bet on?
Yeah, so I started really honing in on Europe to start with, and then the MLS, right? So I saw it as a bit of a gap, and it kind of, you know, ties in with why I'm doing what I'm doing now. But, you know, I saw there was not a lot of, at least what I felt like was transparent and trustworthy information out there, or people really handicapping the leagues that I wanted to follow. And so in my experience, because I bet a lot of other sports, by the way, I bet the whole board of sports, but soccer is the only one I handicap. I actually tail other people's picks and other sports that I trust, right? So I'm a big believer that you find specialists, and that's, again, the edges are small. So I want specialists. So I when I was looking around trying to figure out like this soccer thing, and I was doing okay, it was kind of like, hey, there's a gap here in the market that I might, you know, want to like help fill, right? So I obviously gravitated to the big five leagues in Europe right away, and then the MLS, knowing that, you know, with what would end up being probably largely an American audience, those would be the leagues that, you know, folks would be most inclined to play. But then I started to really look at, like you mentioned, the EFL Championship and EFL League One and League Two. And not surprisingly, I found that as I moved down market into these second, third, and fourth tier leagues, which are still very good quality leagues, by the way, the edges got bigger, right? Because again, the markets are not as efficient, and they're not putting their A-list, talent on putting the lines out and keeping the lines fresh for EFL League One. They're doing that for the Premier League and for La Liga, right?
Right.
So I certainly still play the top leagues quite a bit. And again, if the value presents, I believe you play the value. I don't care what league it is. But honestly, that's how I started getting into more of the lower level leagues. So I think right now, I've definitely done some editing. I found some leagues where it's like, hey, you know what? My model just doesn't seem to produce the right result here. It produces it in plenty of other spots, so no reason to beat my head against the wall. I'm not going to develop a model just for the Portuguese Liga or just for Norway, you know, Elite Syrian. I'm just not going to do it. Like, it's enough work already for me. So if I want one model to serve the leagues I play. So I've done some editing, but yeah, that's kind of how I got into. So I'm playing probably a dozen leagues in Europe, if I had to guess, you know, somewhere around there. And then the three, what I would consider the three biggest leagues in North America, being MLS, Liga MX, and USL Championship.
Okay. And I've mentioned this on my soccer Twitter handle, Bet the USL. I handicap just about, I handicap most of the leagues that you do as well. Liga MX in Mexico is the one league I don't even look at it. I just like, what has Nate got? Okay. Like that's how I've approached Liga MX. I almost enjoy as a hobby the England tiers, just because I find that whole structure. I mean, the four tier structure,
love like
that, is just so fascinating to me. And then of course, I mean, you know, the USL is far and away my favorite. I mean, so we know that soccer has smaller markets. I've been lucky that I've been able to get most of what I want down in my accounts. Have you had any issue with keeping accounts open or being limited at where you're betting?
You know, the limits that I have are limits that I had from the beginning, luckily. So I haven't been like more restricted than I was originally. In other words, some of these books at some of these lower markets are already pretty restrictive, $200. Some of them will let you play. And then, you know, if you wait 60 seconds, they'll let you certainly take it again. Give them an opportunity to move the line, which I think is fair if they want to move it. And there's one book in particular, I'm not going to get into specifics, but like, I know I can play at their book, wait 60 seconds, play it again. And they're probably not going to move the line, even though I'm max betting what they'll let me bet.
Right.
But I have started to notice lately, like they're moving lines a little more quickly on my action, like post action though, which is good. So, right. But yeah, I haven't really had too many limits. I think I had a future, you know, every once in a while, and you've seen this too, like futures can get a little dicey where it's like, you know, I want to take something at like 40 or 50 to one, and I want to throw $100 on it. It's like, yeah, you can get 20, you know, like that kind of thing. So, a little frustrating, but you know, I understand it at the same point.
So there, you know, back, I had one book back when I was still using offshore. Thankfully, Virginia went legal. I don't have to worry about that anymore. But there was one book that on opening lines, it was $100 max, and it would move my line 4 cents every time I bet it. And then within 24 hours, it would go to about 250. Same thing though. But here was the trick, and this isn't always work. But if you want to get action down, a lot of these places have higher limits the second the game goes live. I haven't done it yet this season, but there were a few times last season where I wanted to get more down on the number that was sort of available. And so I waited, like literally in the first minute that it was live, the line was closer to what I wanted than it would have been after getting that amount of action down. And I just put it on one fell swoop right there in live betting. And it doesn't always work out, because sometimes the odds change like pretty quickly in live betting, depending on sort of, that was one thing I noticed. You talked about futures. Nate, I went to tweet about this, and then I deleted it and figured I would talk about the podcast instead, because people don't really need to, I don't need everybody seeing what I'm doing with this. But I started shopping World Cup top goal score markets. World Cup top goal score markets. Now, the World Cup is still like half a year away, right? So I don't expect many books to either be offering this or really to take much on it. Man, I went to DraftKings and I tried to bet two top goal scorer markets for $20 a piece. I was limited to $1.81 on the first and 71 cents on the second. 71 cents! I can find a kid in my neighborhood who's taking bets on free throw shots. It'll take more action than that.
Wow.
71 cents. Why even offer the line if you're going to reduce it to less than a buck?
Yeah.
Holy smokes. That's
ridiculous. And I mean, I hate to say it, but you hear that story a lot, or you see it on Twitter a lot, and it does seem to be some of the names we're talking about that are getting that reputation for, it's like, why even bother putting the line out, to your point? Because that's ridiculous.
So getting limited is one of these things that before you're good at betting, you think it's like this badge of honor. But then the second you're good at it and it happens, it's just so frustrating. You're like, oh, right, this is what everybody's so pissed off about.
Right.
It's, you know, I remember when I tried betting USL futures before the season started, and it was at Barstool, which I have to admit has taken decent bets on games pregame. So I can't complain too much, but I had to roll my eyes when they limited my futures to like $18 a piece.
Right.
And I was like, come on. Like I feel like $20 should be the minimum on all of this, right? Like I should at least be able to get a $20 bet on just about anything you offer on your board. So we could go on and on about sports books and why they do the things they do. Not like that topic hasn't come up plenty in the gambling space, but
yes, exactly.
So now you talked about specialists, right? You go to specialists for other sports that you bet, but you've become the specialist for soccer I don't know how many members you have, but you have a membership platform. It's a one-time fee, and then people get your picks for life. You know, the big question, and the one that I'm always curious about when I hear about someone who is quote unquote selling picks, why choose to go that route versus just simply exploiting your own edge? personally?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, let me be clear. I'm always going to play every bet I put out. So I can guarantee you that there is nothing I'm giving out that I haven't put my own personal money on, and probably in most cases more than most or all of my members. But so I'm trying to take that advantage too, right? So I guess a little bit, you know, I see this from time to time. There are a lot of folks out there, and you'll see, like, on gambling Twitter, if you scroll through, people saying, hey, show your bet slips or whatever, because, you know, these folks are saying, hey, 10 unit lock of the year, you know, it's a $50,000 play. And it's like, yeah, you didn't bet $50,000 on that, right? Like, so definitely don't want that, you know, like, that was never going to be the path for me. But like I said, I definitely want, you know, folks who understand that, you know, this is something they're passionate about too, is having soccer as an expertise in their portfolio. And that's the way I usually present it to people. Like, I hope I'm not the only thing you're doing. Like, you know, soccer should just maybe be a part of your sports betting portfolio. And having that nominal fee, $50, like, seriously, lifetime. And you said it, that's what it is. There's no strings attached. It just allows me to, like, have some little bit more serious bettors, right? And folks who understand that it's long-term, and they're not, like, looking for, like, hey, you got a lock for me today? No, I don't, is the answer. I'm going to play right. 7 or 8 things, and we're hopefully going to win 4 or 5 of them, but there's a chance we might only win 2 or 3 of them, right? And, like, but it's okay, because over now 2,300 play sample since I've been, you know, live, we win 54.6% of the time at an average odds of -109. That's very profitable and very sustainable. So, you know, I want folks who understand the big picture. And I think if you just go with the free pick model and just give out all your information, again, that's fine, but you end up dealing with a lot of trolls, in my experience. You end up dealing with a lot of folks who are like, oh, nice picks, you know. I very rarely hear from my members when I have a bad day, because they've seen good days. And, you know, I'm taking it more hard on myself. I'm probably the one who's going to post the message saying, boy, I was awful yesterday. Sorry about that, right? Because I feel bad, and I want to continue to make money for people. But it served me well. And then, you know, we do have members in that range from, I have one guy who told me he bets $2 a unit. No joke. That's his bet. And I'm like, that's awesome.
Great.
He's like, that's what I'm comfortable doing, because I don't want to put any risk to my family's finances. And then I have a member on the other side who bets multiple hundreds and sends me tips fairly often, because, you know, like in February we made like 45 units or something. So he sent me a very generous tip, because he's like, I've made my one investment in your service, and now as you provide me value, I'll throw you a few bucks. Right. So I just think it's a fair way to go. I, you know, post all my results. And I also know on the other side, because I am a high volume service, I play a lot of plays because I'm covering a lot of leagues. You know, not everybody's playing every play. Well, so again, I let you decide, well, how much value did you see? Then if you feel that's good and you've gotten your $50 worth, and you're thinking, okay, if I was paying someone monthly, I'd be paying $20, $30, $50, $100 a month for this, and you'd like to flip me a few bucks, awesome. But I want it to be because you made money, not because it's like, oh, I got a recurring payment due to Soccer Picks Club.
Right.
Right. And so that's really, again, it sounds like I'm stumping for my business. I'm not. I just think what I've set up is very fair, but it works for me too, where I've filtered out some of the noise. And I think I'm very happy to grow slowly and really get people who are in this for the long haul.
How often are you evaluating your model, right? You learned, you know, a couple of years ago that you've got it right. I'm sure you tweaked it a few more times before sort of getting involved with it professionally. And like, how often are you sort of evaluating the model? How often do you have to like assess results and determine, okay, that's variance or there needs to be an adjustment made here?
Yeah, great question. I'm thinking about the model all the time, right? Like there's probably not a day that goes by that I'm not thinking about the model. how often do I make changes? Very rarely. Because again, I'm going to want to do some regression testing. I'm going to want to, you know, take some retro data and make sure that this fits before I would ever consider making a substantial change. I did make one very, you know, small but very significant, it turns out, change last fall. You know, had kind of a you know, reasonably rough summer. You know, part of that was just, you know, probably got a little more aggressive on the Euros than I should have, to be honest, and a few other things. But coming out of the summer, I had an epiphany. And I've heard Paul Carr talk about this actually on your show. And I've listened to Paul a number of times in other formats as well. And it's trying to figure out how you get that human element into the numbers, right?
Yeah.
And I can't watch, I watch probably more soccer than anybody I know. Like, trust me, I've got, you know, 7-8 displays going on a Saturday. I'm nuts, but I can't watch. There's some leagues I play that don't televise, right? I know I could buy them from the teams. So I obviously have to figure out how to capture some of that human information. And I think I figured out last fall how to do that in a mathematical way. So that's the tweak I made. And actually, since I made that tweak, my winning percentage has gone up by about 1.2%, which, you know, over my average year should be about a 30 unit swing to the good if you know, that holds for the long term. So, you know, I definitely thinking about the model all the time, but I've only made one major change, maybe some, like when we had the COVID seasons, when there were no fans, you know, certainly made some adjustments there for home field and certain things like that. But I've, you know, gone back now to the original model when it comes to those factors.
Yeah. I'm curious about, and I apologize, I didn't prompt you for this question, but it always interests me. And I know a lot of people are always interested in hearing people's different situations. If you're willing to share, like, what was your family's response to you, to your endeavor on professionally pursuing handicapping soccer?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely been such a big part of who I am as a person. So luckily, like, you know, when I met my wife and we were just dating, I was telling her about sports betting, right? Like,
yeah,
I picture that meme that you see out on Twitter with the guy whispering in the girl's ear, you know, like that was probably me, like, explaining to her. And she's a decent sports fan too. So, you know, doesn't mind watching a game now and then. Again, it's gotten a little tougher with the kids. But honestly, like, I was just pretty honest, like, hey, you know, this is just what makes me happy. It's a part of what makes me tick. You know, this is who I am. Now I'll say this on the other side, right? And maybe I'm rationalizing, maybe I'm not, but like, you know, I got buddies who go on huge hunting and fishing trips and, you know, go off for 2 weeks and do X, Y, and Z, or go on a huge golf trip or whatever. And I have other hobbies, but this is the majority of my time and how I spend my discretionary income. So, you know, I think because of that, you know, that helps as well. Right. So I'm definitely trying to balance. It's not like I'm doing all of this and all of these other things. But yeah, good question.
Yeah, I can empathize with the dynamic there you have with your wife. I mean, the better wife over here could not. I mean, you know, the only time she goes to a casino is if I take her to dinner at a restaurant in a casino, right? Like, that's the only time she really cares to be there. She, you know, she listens to, it's the same thing. She listens to me talk about sports betting. We joke, I give her a quote unquote tithe if I've done well, right? So like, if it was a good night, the next morning I'll hand her like a 20 or 100 or something like that, and that's like that's the tithe for the day, right? And you know, she doesn't know much else about what's going on. She doesn't know, you know, betting limits and what's in the, I mean, I've talked a little more recently about like what's actually in my sports betting bankroll and stuff like that. But, you know, so long as I'm still, you know, paying the bills and supporting the family, right? There's the trust is there. And it's, and to the same point, like, I, you know, Eric and I used to talk about this, you know, years ago when he was co-hosting the show, and just how, to your point, this is just who we are. This is our hobby. We like this, right? On a similar question, you know, a lot of people who do this podcast, when we start that first question, like, what was your first exposure to gambling? And a lot of people's first story involves family, right? It's grandparents with a poker game, you know, dad bringing them to the horse track, whatever it may be. A lot of recent problem gambling or gambling awareness campaigns have cautioned against exposing kids to gambling too early. And their examples are like scratch cards, like scratch tickets or whatever are not good birthday gifts for kids and stuff like that. Right. Right. I'm curious, like, what is your philosophy on that? You don't have to get too personal about this, but how aware are your kids of daddy's hobby?
I mean, I'm so immersed, you know, that it would be impossible to completely hide, obviously. Right. So, right. You know, and they're at an age now where, you know, we try to be as honest with them about things as we can. And, so they know, they're aware, you know, daddy bets on sports, you know, daddy, like, you know, I said, hey, I'm recording a podcast tonight with Tim, you know, so obviously they know not everybody's going to do that tonight. Right. Like, yeah. So, you know, so there are certain carve outs of time and things that I do, that, you know, they're aware of. So, you know, need to be transparent about what I'm doing. And, you know, but we don't, you know, luckily my kids haven't gotten into sports at all, like on television or anything, which is in some ways to me kind of like sad, but in other ways I'm like, good to your point, like, yeah. You know, maybe they won't get the gene, you know? So, we don't talk about it, like, unless, you know, one of them, you know, asks me a question, I'll try and answer, but it's very rare that it even comes up.
Yeah, no, that's good. And thanks for answering those. I know talk about family is always, you know, but I think, you know, we're talking about the better life, right? And, you know, right. There's nothing, you know, Drew Dinsick and I, you know, had a nice conversation when he was on about just like the discipline you need to have as a bettor to make sure that what's happening in your betting life isn't affecting how you're like interacting with your family, you know, like you,
great point.
You know, your wife isn't going to like understand that you're being mean to her because you lost 4 units or 5 units, you know, in the afternoon games or something like that. Right. And so right. The stoicism that's involved in being able to take the brunt of losses and be able to not treat the people around you differently because of that, I think is super important. Okay. Let's get back to soccer betting, the USL, right. And let's talk about the USL specifically because it is my favorite league. It is, I think in my handicapping, it is my most profitable league, so much so, and I think I told you this a couple weeks ago, I almost cease handicapping European soccer, not one, so I can concentrate a little bit more on the USL, but two, just so my bankroll is always available for the USL, right? Mm-hmm. Like when the lines open, I want max availability in my bankroll. And so, I mean, not that I'm betting my entire bankroll, but every weekend, but you get what I mean, right? Like I don't,
yeah, you just want to have access. Yep.
Yeah. You know, where does the USL rank on, well, I guess two questions. What is your favorite league as a fan? What's your favorite league as a bettor? And then where does the USL maybe fall in those two lists?
Ooh, that's a good question. Wow. I think as a bettor, you know, you said it earlier, it's Liga MX.
Yeah.
We hit a little regression here the last couple of weeks, but it was coming because I was hitting 72% or something crazy like that for, again, over a huge sample. So I definitely knew that wasn't sustainable, but I do feel like, it's a league that I really understand in addition to the way the model works there. I just really understand how the teams think and how they interact. And there's really a heartbeat to that league that I've kind of, I think, figured out, for lack of a better way to put it. So that's my favorite betting league, but USL's growing on me. It's definitely in moving up the list. England League One has kind of become near and dear to my heart as well, because it, again, had a lot of success there. And then of the bigger leagues, I think Germany Bundesliga is, it's a little more predictable than the other top European leagues, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So as a fan, I don't even know. I honestly, I'm a fan of who I bet on that day, to be completely candid. So I don't even know that I could say, hey, this is my number one league that I like to watch or whatever. I would say the best product, if you're just saying like you're combining the quality of play, the commentators, the TV quality, it's the Premier League. I mean, let's not lie to ourselves. They've got the best broadcasters. They've got, you know, NBC does a great job with their package, and the players are probably the best in the world for the most part. Right. So, right. I mean, certainly I think La Liga would argue with you, but again, you know, I feel pretty strongly that the Premier League is the top and it's the best package. So probably that if I'm going to watch a game I'm not betting on, that's probably the one I would be most likely to do that with. Yeah. So that's probably how I'd answer that question.
Good. I feel the same way about League One. It's where I found my first success in betting English soccer, I guess European soccer in general. I found success there pretty quickly. Of course, punctuated by a big futures bet that I had on Hull City that came through when they ended up winning League One. And USL has really gone to the point, man, where I can have, well, now I have the games on if I don't bet them because I need to do qualitative assessment that helps with week to week stuff. But I'm telling you, man, if I could not bet soccer anymore, I think I'd still follow this league. Whereas I don't know if that's the case with European soccer. I'd probably go back to paying attention to like English soccer and then international soccer. But, you know,
because of like we talked about earlier, the promotion relegation system in these European leagues, there's not a lot of games that have no meaning, right? Like there's some, that's but there's fair. Not a lot because you go up to the last, at least before the last couple match days, like they're either only a few points above the relegation zone or they're just a few points away from European places. So, you know, there's almost always at least one of the two teams has something to play for. And so I think that system, to your point earlier, is brilliant. I wish we could figure something out like that in the States. I don't think it'll ever happen, but can you imagine an MLS, USL Championship, USL League One, that's a true three-tier relegation promotion system? Wow, would that be fun?
It would be fun. I know, look, maybe Ted Lasso can continue talking, making fun of it. And so that way it like wills into more pop culture and people start realizing that United States needs stuff like this. But even in a sport where promotion or relegation is traditional around the world, American investors just don't want to be concerned that their investment is going to drop a tier. Right. Who's to say anything when I'm pretty sure Lynn Family Stadium in Louisville probably could compete with at least a quarter of the MLS squads on attendance and revenue, right? So, yep. You know, who's to say that being look, the USL is expanding. They're getting more partnerships and I could go on and on about this.
ESPN league and sport, Plus has done wonders for that league too. Yes. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, every single game is on television if you have ESPN Plus. And by the way, ESPN Plus, if you're a soccer fan and you don't have ESPN Plus, I don't know what you're doing, because I mean, again, most of the leagues we're talking about have packages with ESPN Plus.
Yep.
Now I know Serie A is on Paramount Plus and obviously the Premier League's on Peacock, but the rest of them, La Liga, you know, you got Germany, and they're even starting to show some second, you know, Segunda Division, Bundesliga 2. They're getting a game or two a week on ESPN Plus too, which is pretty cool. And then EFL Championship, you get at least a couple games a week usually as well. To your point, they could go down to League One and League Two for both of our appetites, but that's another story for another day.
Absolutely. All right. You and I have, in a little more than 10 minutes, are going to hop on a Twitter Spaces to talk, to nerd out on USL Championship even more. For everybody who's made it this far, this deep into the soccer conversation, let's dabble a little bit into some of our favorite things as gamblers, which is Vegas and casinos. Give me, do you have a favorite sports book in Las Vegas, Nevada?
Yeah, I mean, it's recently become Circa. You mentioned him earlier. I have had the pleasure to be out there a couple times so far. And I mean, it's the cream of the cream, right? Part of that is just, it's the newest too, right? So someone else will build a new one that'll be just as good or better. It's just the way it works. I've probably frequented all of them at some point, at least the ones that are downtown or on the strip. I don't get out to like, you know, Red Rocks or Green Valley Ranch or some of those, although I would like to at some point. I just never make the time to do it. But yeah, I would say Circa is definitely for just a day. If I'm going to go sit somewhere, like Buddy and I went out for wild card weekend this year for the NFL wild card weekend. I was out there visiting in Arizona, visiting my parents, and said, hey, let's head over. He flew out and met me. And I'm like, hey, let's buy seats at Circa for one day, you know, yes. Like I'll splurge the $200. You know, we got whatever it was, 5 drink tickets or whatever. I'm like, it's so worth it to just know when you get there, you got a seat, you can come and go get food, come back. You still got a seat, go play some craps, come back. You got a seat. They've just really figured it out, and it's a beautiful casino in general. So really like it there. Westgate used to be pretty popular with me too. Obviously that was the big super book before Circa, and it's still great, sports book as well. A kind of a sleeping giant for me, and that they redid it a few years ago, and I really like, and I think part of it's I've done well there, is the Mirage. They've got really nice sports book, but now we'll see what happens there. Cause as I think everybody knows, that's at least listening to your show. They were just bought by, Hard Rock. So yeah. I think they're going to be redoing that whole property. So we'll see what happens there.
I'm actually staying at Mirage for a couple of days during Vegas Vacation 11 in June. And I've been to the property maybe once or twice. It's actually a property that I'm not really all that familiar with, but I plan to soak in as much of it as I can before it's gone, as everybody will miss what is kind of an iconic property, both in Vegas scenery and in Vegas lore for sure.
Yeah. The original super casino.
That's right. All right, Nate, we got to go talk more soccer on another platform, sir. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And where can people follow you if you've piqued their interest? How can they find you?
So probably the easiest way is on Twitter. We're at soccer_winners, winners with an S. I have to say that because there is another account out there. They're very similar. So at soccer_winners. And then otherwise, you can go to our website, which is soccerpicksclub.com. Very simple. So those are probably the easiest ways to get a hold of me. And we'd love to hear from you.
Wonderful. Nate, thanks for your time, buddy.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
A lot of fun having Nate on. Always love, of course, talking the sport of soccer, but also learning about someone else's approach to handicapping sports. I love his point about he handicaps soccer. He goes to specialists for other sports and still bets those sports. That is also my approach. And I love people that recognize, okay, here's what I'm good at betting. I'm going to focus on this, but I recognize that there's other sports to bet and there's other people better at that. So I'm going to let them do their thing there. When you're someone like me who puts a lot of soccer action into accounts, you know, I don't want to get limited because I'm hitting softer soccer markets. So I try to make sure I'm putting larger or bigger league bets into my accounts. You know, I don't know how to handicap a lot of these sports to be consistent or, you know, to make sure I'm getting the best of it. So I lean on other people so that way I can get my NBA, college basketball, football, whatever bets down and make sure my account is mixed up enough to where my soccer action isn't getting me limited. Okay. Some brief updates. Next week I should have some more interesting updates on a number of these things, but this week will be a little underwhelming. Well, not underwhelming, but not a whole lot to change from last time. May 14, Pittsburgh. That's when we're hanging out at Rivers Casino there in Pittsburgh, and then the following day we will be at Meadows. Hope to see everybody there. I will be at the Pittsburgh Riverhounds game that Saturday night. Let me know. Just show me a DM or a message. Hey, I plan on being at one of the casino meetups. And if you're interested in the soccer meetup, let me know. Vegas Vacation 11. I have booked a couple days at Mirage for just a couple of days. I still need to get my weekend figured out, but that is where I will be, at least for the days that were on that part of the strip for Vegas Vacation. Looking forward to being there. Looking forward to hanging out with everybody. Thank you to Mark, Karen, Tony for putting that together. It's something I get to look forward to each year. Hope to see a bunch of people there. TheBetterLife.us is the website. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife is where you can support the show with a monthly pledge. Part of next week's announcements or next week's sort of updates, administrative notes, whatever you want to call it, will come with a pretty cool update on Patreon content. Everybody knows, I know, it's not a secret, I fully admit it. I have struggled with finding the right, both the right content to use on Patreon, the right frequency, and to be honest, the discipline to be consistent with it. And I fully recognize that, but I'm pleased to say that I believe this next attempt is not only going to be the most reliable, but possibly the best. And I think a lot of you are going to enjoy it. And I think, I imagine a lot of you are going to want to check it out so that way you can hear the new content. Then I'll leave it at that. I think that's all I got. I think that's all of the updates that I have. I know a handful of you have hit me up on being in the second MLB 13 run pool. If I haven't gotten a hold of you yet, if by the time you listen to this and I haven't hit you up, like responded to you, like, okay, cool, let's get you in here, please tap me again. I've gotten like dozens of DMs just in the past week, and there's a good chance you fell through the cracks. Still room in that pool. It's not starting until the beginning of May. So hit me up. It's an $11 buy-in. $10 goes to the pool. $1 goes to an admin fee. Winner gets the full pot, but 30% of it has to go to a charity of the winner's choice. That is the only stipulation on the payout. Okay, that wraps up this. On behalf of Nate from Soccer Picks Club, I am Tiffany Lawson. Good night. Good luck.